regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. We're going to be taking you back once again to the NRA annual meetings in Atlanta, Georgia. Today, you're going to be hearing from, Ryan Petty, Bearing Arms contributor and a Second Amendment advocate. Also, you're going to hear from Adam Crowd, who is the executive director of the Second Amendment Foundation, who was on hand in Atlanta. Just a programming note, by the way, I'm going to be off next week, but we will continue to upload these interviews from the NRA annual meeting. So there'll be some fresh content for you. Obviously, Tom Knighton going to be writing for BearingArms.com, but we'll have some fresh interviews for you on the YouTube page and all of the other areas where you can get Bearing Arms Cam and Company. So that's good news, right? All right. Before we get to today's interview, though, we should talk about something that happened in Hawaii yesterday. Really a stunning turn of events. So Hawaii had basically the high test version of Colorado's SB3, that sweeping semi-auto ban, defining all gas-operated semi-automatic firearms that either have a detachable magazine or can accept a detachable magazine or have a fixed magazine of more than 10 rounds as an assault weapon, right? That must be banned. Now, Hawaii's Senate, 23 Democrats, 2 Republicans. So on paper, I mean, it looked like this bill was a done deal, right? Wrong. No. Yesterday was the last day for the Senate to vote on that measure, and it died, essentially. The gun ban bill dead for the year. There were a number of Democrats who expressed reservations, not necessarily about the theory of banning so-called assault weapons, but the particulars of this piece of legislation. There were actually, though, some Democrats who did express reservations about a broad ban such as this. So there was an attempt, a successful attempt, to amend the bill to add some carve-outs. But at that point, then, the bill still essentially was gutted and considered dead for the year. So the gun control advocates not happy about that. And this is really good news. I mean, this state-level version of the GoSafe Act, which, you know, the federal version introduced by Martin Heinrich and Angus King, you've got a new version introduced just yesterday, I believe, by Senator Adam Schiff and another co-sponsor. Gun control advocates really thought that this would be the year that they could get this done at the state level. Interestingly enough, like, we didn't see, so far anyway, we haven't seen state-level versions of the GoSafe Act introduced in, like, California, New York, but Rhode Island, Hawaii, New Mexico, Colorado, all had state-level versions of that sweeping semi-auto ban. In New Mexico, the bill, I don't think, ever came up for a vote before the end of the session. Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham had threatened a special session on gun control, but it doesn't look like that's going to happen. Apologies for the rooster who wants to add in his 2 cents. Colorado, of course, SB3 got watered down to basically become a permit to purchase bill, which is still problematic, but it is not what the gun control advocates were hoping for. Rhode Island is still up in the air as to whether or not this gun ban bill is going to get a vote in the state Senate. The state Senate president, Dominic Ruggiero, passed away last week, I believe it was. So there are Senate elections, and again, it's kind of unclear what, if anything, is going to be moving in the remaining weeks of the session. That's still the one area of concern. Hawaii, again, the other bill that was defeated yesterday. It's a pretty stunning turn of events. Again, not just in Hawaii, but in all of these other states where the gun control advocates, I won't say they've come up empty. I mean, SB3, even amended, is a victory for the gun control advocates. But this was not the slam dunk that they were expecting or hoping for when it comes to these semi-auto bans. So that is some good news. And hopefully the legal challenge to come to SB3 in Colorado will also end up being good news for gun owners. You know, when it comes to litigation, obviously the NRA is back at it, I think, in a very big way. The hiring of Joseph Greenlee in their illegal wing is, I think, a huge addition for the National Rifle Association. But they've also been working with groups like the Second Amendment Foundation, like Firearms Policy Coalition, Gun Owners of America, on litigation. And I love to see that coalition building. I really do. I talked about it a lot with Doug Hamlin and some other folks during the NRA annual meeting. Came up with, I believe it came up with our conversation with Adam Kraut, but the Second Amendment Foundation, all on its own, involved in more than 50 lawsuits across the country. And yes, working with groups like the Firearms Policy Coalition and the NRA to protect and preserve the Second Amendment rights of Americans all across the country. I was glad to see Adam there on the ground in Atlanta and able to spend some time with us. So let's revisit that conversation. Take a look and a listen.
Well, continuing our coverage of the 2025 NRA annual meetings in Atlanta, Georgia. And, you know, everybody in the 2A world is here, it seems, this weekend, including the executive director of the Second Amendment Foundation, Adam Kraut. Adam, thanks very much for sitting down with us, man.
Thanks for having me back so quickly.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, we just saw each other up in Massachusetts as well last weekend. So good event last weekend, good event this weekend, it sounds like, right?
Yeah. No, having a good time running around. This is a much bigger event than some of the ones I've been to recently, other than SHOT Show. So.
Yeah, and I haven't been to SHOT in a couple of years, so this is...
lucky for you.
Well, SHOT's almost, I mean, like, no offense to our friends of the National Shooting Sports Foundation, SHOT's almost too big.
It's, yeah, so I don't know the last time I've walked around SHOT Show and actually gone to look at anything. For me, it's just meeting after meeting at dinners and meals and other
things. Then you got to figure out how the logistics of getting from...
So it's being here, too. So, like, I know there's some things in the room here I want to go look at.
Right.
I don't know where they are, what they are, and I don't know when I'm going to have time.
Yeah. So so you've been doing a lot of meetings,
yes.
Right? Potential partnerships, existing partnerships, yep, with the Second Amendment Foundation. Okay, that's very good to hear.
Talking about the work we're doing, letting people know, you know, some of the issues we're tracking and things like that.
You know, when you talk about some of the issues here, I mean, Second Amendment Foundation, over 50 active lawsuits right now,
yeah.
Right?
Yep.
Is there a particular, I mean, other than the obvious, well, it's the Second Amendment, is there a particular focus? Is there a particular, you know, whether it's concealed carry, whether it's, you know, silencers, suppressors, NFA items. Is there something that you are particularly focused on at the moment?
I think for me, the 18 to 20 issue is a pretty big one. That's a group of adults that are being targeted specifically by governments to take away their rights, not let them buy firearms, not let them carry firearms. And yet you have people in that age demographic that are single mothers, that they're living on their own, that they have every right to self-defense that he is a 30-something-year-old has, and yet they're unable to exercise that right. So I think that one's a pretty big, important one. And, you know, I was talking about this at lunch, actually. So when we're looking at the legal landscape and kind of looking at, oh, what's the future hold? Well, Gruen took care of carry in the big sense of carry.
Right.
There's more nuanced issues of delays, permitting, you know, requirements, things like that. But carry's kind of settled in the sense of you have a right to carry. Assault weapons ban is something that potentially the Supreme Court may or may not do. We talked about this last time. Snopes still sitting there. A magazine capacity ban as well. So when these bigger issues come off the chest, well, great. What's left? And the 18 to 20 is a very big one. Unfortunately, I think a lot of people kind of don't care as much because, well, like, I'm over 21, so
right.
I care.
Yeah, I think you're right. And, you know, it's interesting because obviously when you're 18, you are a legal adult, right? You can get drafted, you can get married, you can sign contracts, can't buy beer. That's the outlier, right? But despite, you know, the repeal of prohibition, we don't actually have a constitutional right to consume alcohol. It'd be assumed that we have that right. And yet, you're right. I think that there's a couple of things. So one, if you're over the age of 21, you're not personally invested in that idea, right? And then two, you know, I turned 50 last year. I can look at, you know, a lot of 18, 19, and 20-year-olds and say, man, I was way more mature when I was that age, right? I think that they're
still on, but...
But I think it really does depend on the person, right? Look, there are incredibly immature 40-year-olds, too,
sure.
Right? There are 40-year-olds who, frankly, I don't really want them owning a gun. They have the right to. And if you are 18, 19, 20... You have the right to own a firearm. Now, does that mean that every one of them is going to be perfectly responsible? No. But there are 35-year-olds who aren't responsible, right? And so the answer to that is, along with establishing that right, we have to work on the responsibility side of things, right? We have to ensure that there is access to training, that there is access to education. We have to try to model that positive behavior so that, yeah, don't be a dumbass with a gun, right? Don't get your Second Amendment lessons or lessons on gun handling from TikTok, right? Go to the range. Right. But that's a separate subject.
Yeah, and that's also one that shouldn't be a government-required mandate. Personal responsibility is scary. Breathing was scary. People are not always going to make the best decisions, but that doesn't mean you always have to encumber an entire populace because there's some outliers who do something that's sticky.
Right. Absolutely. And, you know, people say, well, it's that age group that is, you know, that's where most gun violence, quote unquote, happens. That may be the case, but we're still talking about a small fraction of that entire age demographic, right?
Yes.
In fact, no matter what age we're talking about, it's a very small percentage of that population, and we don't let the actions of the few limit the freedoms of the rest of us, right?
Yep. You mean tyranny of the minority in that sense. No, you're absolutely right. It's not proper, and you look at other constitutional rights. Fourth Amendment right is in full force at 18.
Mm-hmm.
Your First Amendment rights in full force at 18, and sometimes
more.
Right. Well, and that's exactly it. And that was a conversation I had with a lawyer after I gave a presentation at SCI on 18 and 20-year-olds. I was like, well, assume for a moment that issue settled, and we say 18-year-olds have the same Second Amendment rights as a 30-year-old.
Okay.
What about people under 18? Well, I thought about it, and I actually had a couple more conversations with some lawyers who were far smarter than me, and the prevailing thought was that they would have some Second Amendment rights. It might not be the full boat, but they would have some before. And so I guess the point being is that in the Second Amendment's the only one that there's any kind of restriction on when you turn 18.
Yeah.
The rest of them, you get the whole kit and caboodle.
Mm-hmm.
Why is this one different?
And how can it not be a second-class right if it is the only one,
yes,
right? And the Supreme Court has said the Second Amendment is not a second-class right. So this is something that, do you think the court is kind of reluctant? I mean, we saw them pass by the Worth case, which sure benefited us, right? So 18, 19, 20-year-olds can now apply for concealed carry license in Minnesota, which is great news. But you've also got, you know, the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals case out of Florida. You've got a couple of other cases kicking around,
yes,
right? Do you think this is one of the issues that the Supreme Court is kind of reluctant to take up right now?
Yeah, it certainly seems that way. They may have decided Worth was not a good vehicle because it addressed carry as opposed to acquisition. And if, you know, if 18 and 20-year-olds are able to acquire firearms, then of course carry would be a natural subset of that because we've already established that, you know, in Heller, it's an individual right, untethered to militia service. You have a right to own a gun in your home. McDonald Incorporated against the states. Bruin said you have a right to carry a firearm outside the home. So the next natural step would just be saying 18, 20-year-olds are part of the people, or full stop, the end. Like, there's nothing left to talk about. So could they have done that in Worth? Sure, because all they had to do is say, like, 18, 20-year-olds are part of the people, and this restriction. So potentially, maybe they're waiting for a purchase case to get there, and this is just conjecture off the top of my head, but maybe they're waiting for a purchase case to get there so they can say, you know what, 18, 20-year-olds are part of the people, they have a right to acquire arms. And that's the end of the discussion. Is if they have a right to firearms, they certainly have a right to bear arms.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. What case would that be? The 11th Circuit case out of Florida?
Well, so there's a couple. So you have some purchase cases. You have that 11th Circuit case, the Bondi case, which dealt with Florida's statute that bans the purchase of semi-automatic centerfire rifles. SAF has two challenges to the 18 to 20 ban from purchases of handguns from FFLs.
Okay.
So there's that Fifth Circuit case, Reese, that the government, I think, is right now currently reviewing its position on as to whether or not it wants to seek cert,
mm-hmm,
since the Fifth Circuit overruled the district court. And then there's Brown versus ATF, which stemmed out of West Virginia, where we won in the district court. Oral argument that was the same day Reese was decided. So we're waiting for an opinion from the Fourth Circuit, which inevitably will be a bad one.
Yeah.
So we will certainly seek cert in that. And maybe the Supreme Court's waiting for that. There's some 18 to 20 purchase cases, you know, out of California and a couple other places, I think, off the top of my head. So it could use any of those vehicles. But at the end of the day, all it needs to say is each 20-year-old is part of the people. People have the right to acquire arms unless they're otherwise prohibited. And away we go.
Yeah.
That's my guess.
So speaking of California, I want to get your thought on something. You know, we've seen, not that this has become law yet, but it almost seems like in California in particular, we've seen this, attempt to adhere to the letter of the law or the letter of court decisions while still violating the spirit of the Second Amendment.
Sure.
You know, particularly with like the non-resident carry, I know that we've got a partial injunction, but there's also been legislation introduced that, okay, here's going to be a formal process by which you can apply, but it's still going to be a 2-year permit, or it's still going to allow counties to, you know, charge hundreds of dollars in fees. You know, what is your take on that kind of backhanded acknowledgement that, yes, it's a right, but we're still going to make it as damn difficult as possible for you to exercise it?
I think it's to discourage the exercise of the right, nothing more than that. And there's, I mean, that's exactly the nuanced issues I was kind of talking about with carry. Like, you got carry, so now what about the permitting, the fees, the training requirements, you know, the psycho val requirement in some jurisdictions? Like, we're going to look at your social media. And, well, I mean, Bruin said that may issue was not permissible.
Yeah.
It means we shall issue. And it's got to be based on objective criteria, not subjective criteria. So I think that's where you're going to see these new round of lawsuits to be targeting things like delays in the permitting scheme as far in as much as the fees associated with. Things like that are going to come up next, because I think with Bruin's footnote, it said, you know, more or less, like, permits are fine as long as it's shall issue. The may issue regime can't stand. And that's what New York was using to deny people all the time. And you don't have a good cause to carry a firearm. Oh, somebody didn't threaten your life today within the last 5 minutes of you walking into the office and it's not documented, like, too bad, so sad, no gun for you out right. of the home. So I think that's going to be the next kind of like key battleground where you're extending the carry right, but I think it's only going to go so far, because the court is going to say, like, fees are permissible. Courts have said in the context of other constitutional rights that, like, the actual time to process it and the fees associated with that, they're fine. Take it for like a parade permit or something where you're exercising a First Amendment right. So it's never going to be a free permit necessarily. But when a county is charging $500 for the permit and the wait is 6 months before you can even get fingerprinted, and technically your application doesn't even start until you complete the process. So really your application is now a year plus out. And then all the other ancillary fees like training, and the state's not saying, okay, well, we require training. However, we're going to cap the cost of the class at $40 as opposed to $250 that some people may charge.
Right. Yeah. You know, okay, so speaking of permitting, how do you think the Supreme Court's language in Bruin acknowledging that, shall issue is okay, what does that mean to challenges like, Colorado, SB3, right? You now have this, it started out as a semi-auto ban, it became a permit-to-purchase law. Measure 114 in Oregon, permit to purchase. That seems to be like one of the new favorite tactics of the gun control groups too, right?
Yeah.
If you got to have a permit to carry, well, you got to have a permit to buy. Is there anything helpful? Because again, Supreme Court said permits to carry okay. No real national tradition, though, of a permit to purchase a firearm. So is there a conflict there?
That's a question that remains, you know, the answer remains to be seen on. I'll give you some thoughts on it. I think certainly that footnote will come back on us. I think that that footnote will be cited heavily by opposition in the state saying, Supreme Court plus permits, so you're good to go. And there shall issue. There's some strings attached to it. The reality is that the other part of it is that the Supreme Court takes Snope. I think what Oregon and Colorado have done, that will become the model that all the other states have done. And you already have purchase permits more broadly in like New Jersey and Illinois and stuff like that. But I think that's going to be the model that they'll adopt as a way, again, to discourage the exercise of the right. So Colorado's is particularly messed up because you need a free permit. There's a pre-permit fee. There's the permit fee. There's the training attached to it. It's only good for 5 years before you have to renew. And I think that that's the model they're going to adopt. Now, whether or not it withstands constitutional scrutiny for a court challenge, I don't know the answer to
that. Yeah,
I think there's certainly arguments, very strong arguments against it. But we've also seen how the Supreme Court has laid out very clear language in certain instances, and lower courts have found ways to be like, that's great, but how about this? And, we fit within what you just said.
Right, yeah. Well, and with the Maryland handgun qualification license, that was one of those cases that the Supreme Court passed up, right? They could have taken it. They decided not to. And so Maryland residents have to deal with that nonsense. I will say that I'm concerned that as a Virginia resident, that's the type of stuff that's coming down the pike if, you know, Abigail Spanberger gets elected governor here in November. Like, I am concerned that we're going to see this erosion. Some good states are going to continue to get worse as time goes on, right? right?
It's not going to stop. You know, the best way to stop it is to elect people that aren't going to vote for it in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
It requires an engaged populace, and I'll scold everybody on this podcast because gun owners are not engaged. They're just not. You look at voter registration numbers and the gun-owning population, it's abysmal. You know, there is a cost to participate in society, but it's also your civic duty.
Yeah.
You have the ability to do it, and it's a lot easier and cheaper to stop it before it becomes a law than to go and try and get it undone on the back.
Absolutely. Yeah, you know, I was talking with Philip Van Cleve from the Virginia Citizens Defense League about this yesterday, and, you know, 2020, the gun lobby day, you know, 50, 60,000 people in downtown Richmond, and I was there speaking, and I was looking out of that, you know, crowd of people. Well, where were they on election day, right? The reason why they showed up is because Democrats took complete control of the state government of Virginia for the first time in three decades, and Governor Northam said, we're going to have a gun ban. And that's when, oh, no, and that's when the Second Amendment Sanctuary Movement popped. I mean, it was great to see, but it would have been better to prevent it, right?
Yeah.
And I worry that you're right, that, you know, part of it, I think, is maybe that I want government to leave me alone. I'm going to leave government alone, right? There's that attitude. If I'm not going to get involved, I don't want to pop up on government's radar.
Already on it.
I mean, right, I know. I'm not saying I buy the argument, but I hear that argument. And then, you know, I think now one of the...
Look, I think it's great that you've got a pro-Second Amendment president. I think it's great that we're seeing this Second Amendment task force at DOJ. But there's almost like a false sense of security. Right, that okay, well, now everything's okay. I can breathe easy.
Sure.
Trump's got it covered. And that's not going to be the case.
When there's a Republican president of everybody, like, foot off the gas. Like, no, it's put on the gas. Like, push that pedal through the floor and go. And you know, the complacency is what kills.
Yeah.
You know, pick your subject matter. It doesn't have to be gun. The complacency is what kills. And people go, well, there isn't a threat. Well, actually, there is. It's coming. It just isn't here today.
Right. Have you had any discussions with the administration?
Directly, no. Okay. I have not, personally.
Okay.
Through other people, yes, messages have been sent about things.
Yeah.
But I am not.
Okay. What's your impression of this administration on 2A issues so far?
Well, you know, it depends. If you read the comment section, it's terrible. If you look at some of the things that they're doing, okay. Some good steps. You know, it's not perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but DOJ is obviously reconsidering its litigation position in some cases, not all. You know, you have Adamic still being prosecuted. After ATF made a RPG by inserting a whole bunch of things and saying it's readily convertible,
yeah,
making it fire, you know, around. So there are still some very clear instances where it hasn't become better, but there's also some where the AG Bonnie Potter publishing an interim rule rescinding ATF's authority to conduct federal firearms relief determinations. Mel Gibson and nine others getting federal firearms relief. Well, why is that interim rule important for your viewers? Since 92, Congress through the appropriations has told ATF, you can't use any money appropriated to you to conduct these determinations or relief here. Well, by rescinding that authority and now cabining it with the AG, which is what the law says it is, we could start those again. And they're actually looking at how to re-implement that program. So Congress's appropriations rider on that doesn't matter anymore.
Right.
So things like that, yes, I think there is progress. And again, it's not perfect by any stretch of imagination, but is it better than the Biden regime? Yeah. I mean, and if
there's a very low bar,
right,
to be sure, but yeah.
If you're saying it's not, then I think you need to take it up.
Right. I mean, listen, I mean, just the fact that the DOJ Civil Rights Division is launching a new investigation into these abuses of the Second Amendment in Los Angeles County. It's the first time in history that the Civil Rights Division of the DOJ has ever been used to investigate a violation of our Second Amendment rights. Like, that is historic. And again, we talk about making the Second Amendment a first-class right. Well, that's evidence of that, right? But as you say, you know, some of the other positions that DOJ continues to take, you know, I think that there is progress being made. Maybe not as fast as we would like to see it, but, you know, it is, I think, relatively early on in the administration, too, so.
It doesn't happen overnight, and I think it's easy to forget the size of the map, the federal government. It's frickin' massive.
Yeah.
And so when you have this one-off popping up in it, and it's like, okay,
for how many cases that are being reported where it's bad for the Second Amendment, how many times has something happened that you just don't know about?
Right.
And how many employees are involved in this? It's really easy to like point your finger at the AG, but the AG can't possibly know all of the lawsuits that are going on and the exact, you know, facts in all of them to go, yes, this one, that one, and this one. And particularly when that's not the only thing that they have to deal with. And I'm not trying to cover for Pam Bond. You know, I'll hold her feet to the fire where it needs to be held to the fire by all, you know.
But acknowledge reality, too.
But acknowledge reality.
One last question, because, you know, talking about the prohibited persons and how a process by which people can have their rights restored, obviously, for those individuals, that's great. I will say I'm a little concerned, though, that the Supreme Court may use that fact as a way to punt on all of these cases like Range, right, where you've got a guy who pled guilty to a nonviolent misdemeanor, but it was punishable more than a year in prison at the time, lost his gun rights forever. Third Circuit says, well, that's wrong. You know, at least in this case, he shouldn't lose his Second Amendment rights. That's going up before the Supreme Court, right? That's okay. So, you know, are you concerned at all? Like, on the one hand, this is great. We've got this process for the first time in, you know, decades. But are you concerned that that might actually lead to a legal setback or at least a legal stall?
I want to rephrase that. I believe the government is not filing a cert petition at Range. I don't think they. Oh, really? I saw the news on the other day. So I don't. And your viewers can fact check me and ask such. But I think they declined to file.
So that would, and that's, well, that would
be in line with what the Third Circuit said. On a more broader scale, prohibited persons issues near and dear to Mike Archibald did a lot of it in Pride and Prejudice. So there were two cases that were on cert petitions. One was at my former employer that started when I was in private practice that I worked on. One was Pelagitar, who was convicted of lying on a federal tax return. And the other was Holloway, who will DUI in Pennsylvania. And then there's a companion case, Williams, which is in the Third Circuit. Same facts. The only difference was that Holloway got work release. Williams was confined to his home because of health. No other violent crimes or history or anything like that. And he got DUI at the highest rate, punishable by 5 years of imprisonment, state law misdemeanor, and 9 to 18 DUI. So the issue is important to me because you look at how people are getting chemmed up by Beavis's dissenting Lajitar saying that opening a bottle of ketchup in New Jersey and sticking it back on the shelf is a felony. Okay, so we're going to prohibit this person for the rest of their life.
Right.
So to answer your question, I'm not sure I'm worried about the Supreme Court fronting.
Okay.
Because the question before the court is, it's a legal issue, and does this comport with the nation's history and tradition? Not, is there another mechanism for AAO to?
Okay.
Now, will the Supreme Court take it? We all thought with Amy Coney Barrett on the court that Pelagitar and Holloway were pretty darn good, you know, shots at it, right?
Right.
And so it's possible that they just say it's not an issue we're going to touch and, you know, we're left with what we got. But if DOJ is successful in re-implementing the program, it potentially opens the pathway for, you know, millions of people to have their rights respected.
Yeah, and that would be a huge benefit. I mean, I know friends personally who made mistakes when they were younger, nonviolent offenses. Upstanding members of their community now for decades. They own their own business. They're, you know, great husbands. They're great dads. And yet, they can't own a gun.
Yeah. 20 years ago, I was drunk, did something stupid, got arrested for it, and now I can't do this.
Yeah.
I get those emails still a fair amount. There's actually one sent I either respond to in my inbox asking about this exact thing with Range. You know, and my advice to the person is going to be, wait and see what DOJ does, because bringing a lawsuit's going to be really expensive, and there's not a guarantee of success.
Right. Absolutely. Listen, Adam, I really appreciate you sitting down with us. Thank you again for everything you're doing at the Second Amendment Foundation. SAF.org is the website, and I look forward to having you back again, if not in person, at least over the Zoom.
Sounds good.
All right. Thanks, Adam.
My thanks to Adam for joining us on the program. I'm going through a little Adam Kraut withdrawal, as a matter of fact. I have not had a chance to spend much time with Adam in person, but I was with him in Massachusetts 2 weekends ago, with him in Atlanta last week, and I don't know when I'm going to get a chance to see him again in person. I guess Gun Rights Policy Conference coming up here in a few months. That'll be the next opportunity, I guess. Hopefully I'll get to see Ryan Petty there as well. I always love spending time with Ryan. He has become a dear friend of mine over the past few years. I am always grateful for his contributions at Bearing Arms. I'm grateful for his Second Amendment advocacy. And it was fantastic. I didn't get a chance to spend much time with Ryan in Atlanta, basically just the time that we had sitting across the table from one another. But it's always good
to talk with Ryan. I love his perspective on things, and this was no exception. So take a look and a listen to our conversation there at the NRA annual meetings in Atlanta.
Welcome back to our coverage from the NRA annual meetings in Atlanta, Georgia. I mean, you know our next guest because you read him at Bearing Arms. You hear him all the time. Ryan Petty is with us. Ryan, how are you, sir?
I'm great, Cam. It's good to be here with you face-to-face for once.
I know. Yeah. It's awesome. It's been a couple of years since we've actually had some FaceTime with one another.
It has, yeah.
And
show 24 or 23?
23, I think it was.
Yes.
Maybe even 2022.
Yeah, well, it's good. It's good to be here with you, and it's good to see you.
It is good to see you. I gotta say, you look great, man. I love the cowboy look. This is fantastic.
We had four calves born this week. I am officially in the cattle business, sir. So, gotta have the hat.
Yep, absolutely. Yep. What kind of cattle are you raising?
They're Black Angus.
Okay.
Yeah.
I actually know a little. I know a very little about Black Angus. That's what my neighbor has too. Yeah. So. I have them by association because they're hanging out in my pasture every once in a while.
Well, my neighbor had a herd, and he was selling off some of the calves, and I bought seven of them a year ago, a little over a year ago, and four calves born this week. They're all doing well. Moms are doing well, and I don't know. They made it look easy.
I was going to say, did you have a lot of experience? Do you have any experience with cattle before you bought your neighbor's cows?
I don't. No, none at all. But I've got great neighbors.
Yeah.
That are willing to answer questions, and my veterinarian is like my neighbor down the street. So if I've got a problem, she said I can be there in 10 minutes.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. Makes me feel much better.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Now let's talk about some things that don't make you feel so great.
Yeah.
What is going on with the Florida legislature?
Oh.
I mean, so I shouldn't even say the Florida legislature. What's going on with the Florida Senate?
Yeah.
Because the House keeps passing good bills, right? They passed the repeal of the 121 gun purchase ban.
Yes.
And then I understand Florida State, the shooting in Florida State,
yep,
is going to impact to some degree the politics in Tallahassee. But even before that shooting, Ben Albritton, president of the state Senate, was very much on the fence. Kathleen Passidomo, the previous Senate president who objected to constitutional carry,
right,
is now in charge of the committee that I guess is hearing all these gun bills. And she basically said, no, we're not moving forward with any of these.
Right.
How frustrating is it for you as a gun owner, as a Second Amendment advocate, as a school safety advocate, to see politics being played here with our Second Amendment rights?
It's more than frustrating, Cam. Look, you and I have talked a number of times. You know, I've wanted to right the wrongs of the Parkland school safety bill. There were a couple of gun control measures in there that I do not support, red flag laws and raising the age from 18 to 21. We need to move that back down in Florida. There is no, as red as Florida is, there is no reason to have the gun policy that exists in the state. And unfortunately, I think the reason we see this, Cam, is that we've got some senators and legislators that were there around the Parkland time. Mm-hmm. And what I hear through the grapevine is they're proud of that legislation and they don't want to see any of it changed. And it sort of clouded their judgment with regards to the Second Amendment writ large and legislation in Florida. I think that old guard's going to have to Passidomo on.
Right.
And then I think we may see some stuff. The other complicating factor this year was a legislature decided to pick a fight with Governor Ron DeSantis. Now, I get it. There's a lot of folks that are upset with him for running for president. They feel he betrayed President Trump. Look, that's way above my pay grade. I don't understand. I've never even considered running for president. I don't know what it takes to do that. But at that level, you know, Governor DeSantis has been one of the best governors with regards to conservative values and principles. And he's been asking for repeal of the Parkland gun control legislation. He's been asking for constitutional carry. He'll support open carry. He's been leading on this. But unfortunately, the leadership in both the Senate and the House, even though the House passed some legislation this year, they have decided to pick a fight with Governor DeSantis. And it's so frustrating because we have a supermajority. We don't need to be playing intramural games when we could be winning in the state of Florida. And for that, you know, look, a lot of folks are suffering, 18 to 21 year olds that can't protect or defend themselves. And when you talk about FSU, oh my goodness, campus carry would have been a big help there because, as you know, we found out most of the classroom doors don't lock.
Right.
And the professors weren't trained on what to do. I can go into that story in detail, Cam, but those students have a role. They need the right. They're adults. They should have the right to protect themselves.
Absolutely. And, you know, again, we saw the futility of a gun-free zone, right? You're not allowed to carry. Well, this guy didn't care. Not allowed to purchase a gun until you're 21. Well, he stole his mom's, you know, pistol.
Yeah.
You know, sadly, as we know, if somebody is committed to carrying out an attack like this, there's not a gun control law on the books that somebody can't avoid, can't exploit, can't, you know, get around. Now, they might have to break the law to do it. But if they're willing to take as many human lives, they're intent on taking as many lives as possible. They don't care if they're breaking a law.
Right. No.
You know?
And they don't care what gun control act is or regime is in place. Let's be honest about this. I've got a piece coming out in The Federalist very soon where I'm talking about this notion that, you know, gun violence is this uniquely American problem. And Dr. Lott and other folks who you know very well have done some really good research to show that it's just not the case. And when you look at some of the horrific attacks that have happened outside the United States, some of those have been with firearms in countries with very strict gun control, number one.
Yep.
Number two, the ones where they didn't have access to a firearm, they burned the place down.
Right.
You know? So gun control doesn't work. What we know works is the right to keep and bear arms and defend your life and your liberty. We know that works. It works every time we try it. We do it in K through 12 schools in Florida. We protect our schools with firearms. It's time to protect our universities the same way.
Absolutely. Ryan Petty, I could talk with you for hours.
Yeah.
But I appreciate you spending some time with us here at the NRA annual meetings.
Great to be here, Cam. Good to see you.
Always good to see you, my friend.
All right. So there you go. Again, more coverage from the NRA annual meetings coming up next week. Even though I will be out, we will have you covered. And you'll be hearing from some great folks over the next few days. All right, let's turn our attention to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. You know, it is so rare, I got to tell you, it is so rare to have a recidivist report with a happy ending. Because usually these are stories that just, you know, generate a lot of outrage, but I was surprised, actually, pleasantly so, to run across this story out of, I believe it was Ohio. Crime victim curtails defendant's early probation. Yes, out of Warren, Ohio. Now, I will say that the fact that this gentleman received probation only is a problem in and of itself, but I'm glad to see that the victim in this case was able to at least make sure that this guy's probation was not terminated early, which is something that is afforded victims in Ohio. So the guy's name is Kyler Reed. He was sentenced to 5 years of probation. And last September, I guess, his probation was actually discharged after serving just 2 years of that 5-year probationary sentence. But the victim in this case was denied the chance to address the court during that probation hearing last September. And so she was given a second chance at a hearing on September 25th, but she failed to show up. So the probation termination apparently stood. Now, under this law in Ohio called Mary's Law, victim of a crime is allowed to challenge that order through a direct appeal. And she did so. So the case will now go back to the county where another hearing will be held on this early probation termination, and the victim will be heard in this case. So as for now, sounds like this guy is back on probation, could still possibly have that probation terminated, but she has at least stopped that or at least foreclosed that from happening for a little while. As WKBN reports, the case surrounds a 2021 incident where Kyler Reed kicked in the door of the victim's home
search through rooms while carrying a stun gun, and then told the victim that her son had a warrant for failure to appear in Newton Falls court. Kyler was arrested, charged with burglary, criminal damaging, menacing, and trespass into a habitation. The burglary charge got dropped in a plea deal. And he was subsequently sentenced to 5 years of probation only, for criminal damaging, menacing, and trespass into a habitation. So May the 9th, I guess, is when this new probationary hearing will take place. And Kyler Reed will learn, I guess, whether or not he's going to remain on probation for the next few years or have the probation terminated early. I don't know all of the circumstances here that led to that burglary charge being dismissed, but when you kick in the front door of somebody's home, you start searching through rooms there, you got a stun gun threatening the folks inside. I don't think that should result in a slap on the wrist. I don't think that should result in merely 5 years of probation, much less two. I think that deserves a little time behind bars, and I am disappointed that that didn't happen, but I am glad to see that the victim in this case standing up for herself. Let's hope that she can actually make it to that hearing on May the 9th. Today's Armed Citizen story from Schenectady, New York, where a man shot and killed a home invader. He has not been charged in connection with that shooting, but he has been charged with illegally possessing the firearm that he used to defend himself. Because, of course, in New York, you need a permission slip from the state before you can exercise your right to keep and bear arms, and he apparently did not have one. So Shore News Network reports that it was April 24th. A individual named Yadram Singh of Schenectady was shot and killed. He was engaged in an armed home invasion at the time when he was shot by 25-year-old Mark Cunningham, who was a resident of the home. Shore News Network reports that Schenectady police said their investigation determined that Singh had forcibly entered the residence while he was armed. Cunningham reportedly used a firearm during that confrontation, resulting in Singh's death at the scene. And again, while he lawfully defended himself, he had the right to protect himself with a gun. Police contend that he did not have the right to possess the firearm because he did not apparently have a permit. So he's been charged with criminal possession of a weapon. He's not been charged with being a prohibited person. Doesn't sound like Mark Cunningham was not allowed by law to have a gun, merely that he did not have, again, that Second Amendment permission slip that New York says is needed for you to possess a pistol or a long gun in your home. Not only do you have to have a license to carry, you have to have a permit to possess these items. And Mr. Cunningham apparently did not. Shore News Network says police have not disclosed how Cunningham came into the possession of the firearm, whether it had previously been reported stolen. I mean, maybe. Maybe he got it from a family member. Maybe he owned it out of state and moved to Schenectady and didn't apply for that permit. I don't know. Don't know the circumstances here. But again, let's hope he's got a good defense attorney or maybe a jury who will see this case for what it is. And in the meantime, you know, it's not going to happen in New York because of the anti-gun legislature. But it would be nice. You know, in Chicago, the Cook County State's Attorney has announced this program where individuals who are charged with unlawful possession of a firearm, basically possessing a firearm without a FOID card or a carry license, will have the opportunity to obtain a FOID card, to get legal, and have those charges dropped. It would be great if New York had something like that in place too, but I just don't see it happening, not anytime soon. All right, finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place, at the right time, and willing and able to do the right thing. A group of good Samaritans, including some nurses, saving a teenage girl in New Jersey from an attempted abduction. The New York Daily News reporting the 17-year-old was walking down a road in North Bergen, New Jersey, yesterday, when apparently she was spotted by a guy named Roberto Canavalan. He allegedly charged at the girl, grabbed her, and tried to drag her off the street, apparently trying to abduct her. New York Daily News says a struggle lasting approximately 2 minutes between the two ensued before a group of Good Samaritans rushed over to help. North Bergen Police Chief Robert Farley said three nurses from a nearby doctor's office. There was another man who had just been strolling down the street, saw what was going on. And they ran over. They were able to fight off Canavalin. When officers arrived on the scene, the victim and those who protected the teenager were able to identify the suspect. He was subsequently arrested. Now has been charged with kidnapping and endangering the welfare of a child. He's in custody, at least until his first court appearance anyway. And this could have been a very, very bad situation were it not for the intervention of those Good Samaritans who saw what was going on, came to the aid of that teenage girl. I'm glad that Mr. Canavalin wasn't armed because, again, thanks to New Jersey's law, while it is now possible to get a concealed carry license, those licenses are still relatively few and far between. And it doesn't sound like there were any armed citizens involved in the successful effort to save that teenage girl from abduction. So in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. We thank those Good Samaritans there in North Bergen, New Jersey. And again, that is, that's all we've got for you here on this edition of Bearing Arms Cam and Company. As always, I want to thank you for being a part of the program. I am looking forward to being back with you, at least in spirit, next Monday and all next week. Again, we'll have more interviews from the NRA annual meeting. And I'm looking forward to being back with you in person the week after next. As I mentioned, we have Missy's Celebration of Life coming up this weekend. That's going to be a good time. Got a lot of friends and family coming in from all over the country, quite frankly. And we are going to pay tribute to a life well lived and a woman who was well loved. I know that a lot of you would like to be there in spirit as well. And I think that I will feel that on Saturday. And if you are in the Farmville area sometime between noon and 5, you want to drop by. It's going to be at the Farmville train station. It's an open house style event. Just come in, stay for as long as you want. You can color pictures of Missy. You can get, while supplies last, a temporary tattoo of one of her favorite tattoos. You can sign her pickup truck, Large Marge, the Land Barge. We've got some Sharpies. And you can write your message to Missy there. You pick up a copy of her favorite brownie recipe. And, you know, if you knew Missy, if you were lucky enough to know her in person, you can share some stories. Because we'd love to hear them. All right. We will see you back here soon. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.